Welcome to the Restoration Apostolic Church podcast. We are located in Winterville, right outside of Athens, Georgia, and are led by our senior pastor, Ed Walden. Our mission is to be a Book of Acts church in this modern world, to build a strong and unified church family, and to see lives saved and changed by the power of Jesus Christ. We hope that in listening today, you will be strengthened, encouraged, blessed, and restored.
Church, I love my Lord, I love my family, I just love everybody, and I thank God for lovable people, I thank God for likable people. I've had a few not so likable people in my life, I think we all have. You know, we just say God, love them, you know, that's what my grandmother said. That was her version of bless their heart, you know, God love it, you know. But I'm thankful for my pastor, his family, and the friendship they give. And I know other people are going to say it, but I'm glad to see you. How you doing, Sister Jordan? I love when people love to see old friends. I just made my day. I was already in a good mood, but good Lord, thank you for that. You know, so y'all make sure you give her a whole lot of love and attention. You know she likes attention. You know how she is about that. You know, so. No, we're thankful for them, and the work that they do is such a blessing to us as well. You can go ahead and turn to, we'll stand in just a moment to read, but you can go ahead and turn to John chapter 13. We'll start at verse 34. And something rather disturbing happened to me recently. I drive Uber, and I've been doing that for years. It's nice extra income, you know, as you're building on other things. It's such a blessing that you can do that just whenever you want to. And you just drive around and people give you money. It's crazy, you know. And people ask me if I've ever had any horror stories, and I haven't. I have not had anything awful happen. One guy got upset. He was a little anyway, and he slammed my door. But other than that, I've not had anything happen. But I did have something rather disturbing happen. I had a very uncomfortable exchange with someone. Sometimes people ask me what I do, if this is all that I do. I say, well, I'm also a minister, and I'm a counselor, and I do this as that continues to grow, and ABA therapist. They said, okay, and then sometimes they'll tell me a little bit about their, you know, some issues. They say, what should you do for stress? What should you do for this? And I'm always glad to talk about that. And this one young lady, we were talking about it, and I said, you know, just feel your feelings. If you're angry, it's okay to be angry. If you're stressed, be stressed. It will pass. It's okay. And I said, sorry, I don't mean to sound like Mr. Rogers here. And she said, yeah. And there was something in the way that she said, yeah, that bothered me. I said, you don't know who Mr. Rogers is, do you? And with a very apologetic tone, she said, no, I don't. I thought, oh, my Lord, this is what we've come to. This is what the world is now, where there are adults, college-age adults, who don't know who Mr. Rogers is. Is there anybody who doesn't know who Mr. Rogers is? Just get out of here right now. No, I'm taking Mr. Rogers, hello, Naper, you know, that guy, okay? And that's okay. I'm not criticizing them for that. That is nothing, you know, on her own. And then I said, oh, well, you know, he was played in a movie by Tom Hanks. And there was a pause. I thought, she doesn't even know who Tom Hanks is, okay? But that's just the way of things. That's the way that it goes. And I got to thinking, how terrible would it be if we sit with our kids one day and we just start discussing some well-known, basic, fundamental, spiritual, or biblical principle or doctrine, and they look at us like they don't know what we're talking about. I've never heard that, Dad. I've never heard that. I don't know what you're talking about. Now, I understand we still get new revelations as we move on, some that are broad, some that are just for us. But that's not what I'm talking about. I think things that are known, things that we just think of as out there, that everybody should know this, but we can't take those things for granted. We have to be very intentional, very deliberate. If I want my girls to know the joys of Mr. Rogers, and what was it you say? Say what you said, Belle, when I told you that. How did you say it? Yes, that. No wonder so many of them don't know how to regulate their emotions. They didn't have Mr. Rogers, you know, and they're all repressing and shoving it down. Don't do that, okay? I like to talk about that kind of thing, but I'd like to take a little survey, if I would, before I get started, this will help me to put things into context. Is there anyone here, parents, family member, whatever, whoever, that in your household you have basically, essentially done everything right with your family? Would you raise your hand if you've done everything, if you've basically, there have really been no mistakes, okay? If you've never blown up at your family, just raise your hand, okay? All right, if you pretty much get it right, would you raise, come on, Pastor, come on, be honest here, okay? No, he knows I kid, you know, but there are no perfect families. I offer no criticisms today, and this, I don't want anything I say, I know I like to qualify things, I don't want anything to say to come across as a criticism, because it's not. But there are things that I believe we can do to have a more peaceful and godly home, because if peace should be anywhere, it should reign in our homes. And if you'd like to stand as we read this word, John chapter 13, we'll start at verse 34. A new commandment, this was new 2,000 years ago, it's not new anymore. A new commandment I give unto you, that ye, what? Love one another. As I, okay, he tells us, as I have loved you, it's a high standard, that ye also love one another. By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love to one another. Pastor, would you pray and ask God's blessing on this day? Hallelujah. Clap your hands one more time. Thank the Lord for what He's done. God bless you as you're seated. I'd like to talk on this thought. An opportunity for love in a godly home. An opportunity for love in a godly home. Love is the most basic and essential defining trait of a Christian, especially to the world. The world recognizes a lot of things that we do. You know, back in the 90s, the way that we worship, that was a Pentecostal thing. That was the way Pentecostals do it. And then, you know, starting really back in the 60s, you know, some of people who say, well, I'm charismatic, you know, that was kind of label that was carried. They said, well, we do that too. So the Pentecostals and the charismatics, you know, they lift their hands, they worship, they maybe dance a little bit. Now just about everybody does that, okay? So, and that's good. We want that kind of worship to grow and to spread. And I believe God can accomplish His will, through those things. But, you know, our worship and the way that we act, that is not our defining trait to the world. You know, we can say, ooh, he's got some Pentecostal in him, or he's got some this in him, but that's not really what defines a Christian. It's also not our gifting. I love the talent that we have. I love the gifting that we have, and not just natural gifting, but even spiritual gifting, things that we do in the church and the ways that God uses us, those things are essential. Those things are necessary, but that is not what truly and basically defines us as God's disciples, again, particularly to the world, because the world, especially now, is not very impressed with speaking in tongues, especially if they have not experienced. If they have not experienced that, they don't understand it. They, well, that's something that some people do. They're, you know, they see that they get, you know, the production quality of all our videos is cinematic now. You know, it's great, and whether it's live edited or recorded, it's all just high quality stuff. And a lot of the, if you look at some of the 90s Christian movies and shows, cheesy. Well, can we say cheesy? Let's just leave it there. Cheesy, okay? But, you know, the production value of many aspects of who we are has gone up, and that's fine. I think that can be useful, but that is not what causes someone to say that is a Christian identity. That is a Christian notion. That's not what it is. What is the most Christian thing about us and should be is simply love. Now, love, that covers a very broad range. That is a lot of things. It covers a broad range of attitudes that we have. It covers a broad range of activities. It covers a broad range of how we think about things and how we approach things. It is very broad. It is a huge tent that should cover everything that we do. Everything that we do and say should be based, first of all, on love. Even if we don't have a lot of wisdom to give in what we do. We've seen that in our church. Somebody spoke out. Well, they didn't use a whole lot of wisdom. You know, they just kind of spoke out of turn, made everybody feel a little bit cringy, but they said it in love. You know, we can be forgiving if someone speaks in love. If someone says something that's maybe a little bit out of place, maybe they're not the ones who should have said something. We can say, well, you know, we'll teach them wisdom, but they did it out of love. And that's, you know, that gives us some relief, and it defines who we are. Love must be our first priority in all areas of life and in ourselves. First priority. Somebody say first. Mark 12:31. And thou shalt what? Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, with all thy strength. Every part of us must be used to love God. This is the first commandment, and the second is like. He equates the two. Namely this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. There is none other commandment greater than these. So, love God, love others, love ourselves. The first one is easy, especially if you are a Christian, it's easy to love God. Even though there are times in our lives that we may experience tragedy and we may experience great loss and we feel anger, and some of that anger we may even feel it towards God to some extent. And I understand what it is to feel like. I don't think God takes great offense to that as long as we are faithful and we still love Him. But it's easy to love God. Sometimes it's easy to love one another. Sometimes it can be a little bit challenging. I think for some people, not always, I don't want to make a broad statement, but for a lot of us, it can be difficult to love ourselves, having a self-appreciation and self-love. Generally speaking, if we wouldn't talk to someone who has come to us for help in a certain way, then we shouldn't talk to ourselves in that way. Okay? So not appreciating ourselves, I'm just. No, you're not just anything. You are a fearfully and wonderfully made child of God. That's who and what you are. That is part of your identity. So for us to say, I'm just this or I'm just that, and to be down on ourselves in any way, and I understand that can come from a great number of sources, it's problematic to say the least, because it's going to affect our relationships with others. It's going to affect our relationship with God. It's going to affect how we treat others, how we converse with others, how we relate to others. If we see ourselves as below the people that we are talking to, honestly, we may think, well, that's humble. They're going to like, no, they won't. Nobody really wants to be around someone who's always down on themselves. I think that's part of the reason when I was younger, I had trouble making friends. I just wanted to be down on myself. And someone would say, you're so self-conscious. And I would, you know, like the attention. But honestly, nobody really wants to be around that. Now, if you don't want to be around anybody else, don't be down on yourself just so you can get people away from you, okay? That's problematic also. Not only that, how dare I be down on something that is fearfully and wonderfully made? I am God's creation. I am His pride. I am His joy. How dare I be insulting? And yes, insulting to God by not loving and appreciating who I am. Now, we could talk about that for a long time. I won't take that time, but it is very important, because God said, love God, love neighbor, love yourself as you love yourself. So, biblically define love. What is love? Again, broad, very wide covering. First of all, our example is the life and sacrifice of Jesus. If we want to know how to deal with a situation, well, if we're dealing with a friend, someone close to, how did He talk to His disciples? Yes, there was one that He said, you know, there's a devil among you. He didn't point Judas out to everybody. He was very discreet about that. And even when He told Judas, go out, that thou doest, do thou quickly. Even then, the disciple says, well, what's Jesus talking about here? Jesus was discreet even then. So we don't want to embarrass each other. If it came down to it and self-sacrifice was necessary, I pray that we could, in fact, do that. So the way that Jesus dealt with the woman who was caught in adultery, I hope we could all be that gentle with others. I hope we can be that gentle even with ourselves, and particularly if someone in our own household gets involved in something. I hope that we can be gentle and say, look, don't do this again. Go and sin no more, but I want to be gentle. I want to be here for you. So Jesus is our example. 1 Corinthians 12, 4 through 8 also describes what love is. This is a very exhaustive description of love. And love is patient and it is kind. It is unenvious. It does not envy. It is not boastful and it is not proud. It is not self-seeking. Does not keep score of wrong. Now, I know that our mind and body will keep score of certain wrongs. You know, trauma, for example, will stay with you. If you lose somebody and you don't grieve for them for 10 years, in 10 years, you can grieve for that person as if it were yesterday. And during that 10 years, you're going to have a very hard problem, okay? So the fact that, you know, our minds and bodies keep track of certain things that go wrong, certain traumatic events, we, you know, soldiers who come home, their mind and bodies are keeping track of that. It's very difficult for them. Sometimes we want to lay that over onto other people because someone has done something to us that wronged us, that caused us trauma that we are still dealing with. But even if we are dealing with that, we still have to forgive that person. It doesn't keep a score of wrong. Delights in truth and not evil. Sometimes we see someone who wronged us get what they deserve. And it is difficult to see that because we know that we have to resist that satisfied feeling that we feel, but it does not delight in that. And if I find myself saying, yep, I knew it was going to happen, I have to check myself and check my flesh. But we delight instead, what do we delight in? In truth, okay? And I don't mean truth, oh, the truth came out. I'm going to delight in the truth was revealed about that no good prayer. No, that's not what the Bible is saying here. It delights in truth. It protects, and I'm paraphrasing some of this, it protects, it trusts, it hopes, it perseveres, it keeps going. Love doesn't fail. Love doesn't give up. This sets a very, very high standard for love in our lives. But the fortunate thing is that with all these different adjectives that we have, we can take these things and apply it to so many different areas of our life. Now, if love only had one descriptive word, it wouldn't apply to as many. If love hopes, that's all love does. Well, we can't apply hope to every single area of our life. But since there are all these wonderful and magnificent things that love is, we can take and we can say, okay, this applies here. Perseveres, that applies to that. Is not boastful, that's here. It's gentle, it's kind. You know, that applies here. A kind can apply to so many different things. And we can just drop all these things into all these areas of our life so that we can have a fulfilling life, so that we can live a life of love, so that we can have all the things that God wants us to have, and we can be an example to the world. Matthew chapter 5. Here's what an opportunity for love looks like in the Bible. Okay, here's a biblical opportunity. In Matthew 5, first of all, it starts off with the Beatitudes. Jesus starts off his sermon by complimenting. He's giving compliments. He's giving comfort. He's giving encouragement. So whenever we can see by this example that if we have some corrective things that we need to do, let's start off by saying, hey, you did a great job doing that. Blessed are you for this. And thank you for all the wonderful things that you are. I genuinely appreciate that. So that's what he did. He started saying, if you've been in mourning, God bless you. You know, if you've been persecuted, God bless you. And then he goes on to describe situations, specific situations here, that love can be applied to. Now, he only describes about three or four different specific situations, but we know that's not the only ones that apply. So let's look at these and think what applies in an emotional way. What is it that he's getting at? First of all, he talks about turning the other cheek. Now, if someone, and he said, if someone smites you on the face, okay, and you turn the other cheek, anybody ever had to do that before? Anybody ever had to do that before? Yeah, I know a few people that have had to do that, okay, and I thought they handled it well. Now, well, I guess that means if they smack us on the hand, that doesn't apply, and I can smack them back if they smack me on the hand, okay, or if they thump my nose. That's not the same thing. I can just thump them back. No, that, we know that that's not what Jesus is saying here. What he is describing is momentary aggressive behavior. He's not describing a continuous attack. Also, he's not saying if someone comes at you with a bat and they just keep going and keep going and keep going, just lay there and take it. He doesn't say that at all. He said, but if someone is in a moment of rage, a moment of aggressive behavior, don't fight back. Okay. I've told my girls now, if someone just hits you, don't hit back for a couple of reasons. First of all, that's what Jesus said. Second of all, if you hit back, it becomes a fight. If they're the only ones who hit, it's assault, and you can have them arrested for assault, okay? You've got options if you don't hit them back. Now, all of us would pass this if this were to happen. Again, if they are attacking us, we can defend ourselves. We understand that. And if they're attacking our loved ones, I don't think I'm getting into weird territory here. I think we all understand what Jesus is talking about is a momentary act of aggression. He says, those that would sue you or those that seek to borrow. Now, what is the situation here? The situation is those that take advantage of us. Again, if this continually happens, we know that we have to set certain boundaries in our life, because if we don't have boundaries and we just let anyone and everyone come into our house and just empty out our house, well, that puts our family at risk, and we know that that's not okay. So, but if someone says, I need this, I'm in need right now, maybe their motives are pure, maybe their motives are not. Jesus does not discuss their motives. He said, give it to them, help them out, if you can do that. Now, if they continue to come back and continue to ask, well, then we need to be careful, because we are becoming enablers. And the Bible even has some things to say about that. So, going the extra mile, if someone says, walk with me a mile. Now, going the extra mile, we apply that to a lot of things, because Jesus was not saying only these specific three situations do you show love. But when someone asks of us and we are able to do more than they ask, that applies to many situations, then do more than what is asked, okay? If someone says, I need you to help me for a little while, can you come over, just give me an hour. I've got a job I need some help with, no problem. We go there. And we don't look at the clock, and it's 60 minutes. We say, you asked for an hour, so I'm gone. What should we do? According to Jesus, say, hey, what else can I do? You've been here an hour. No, I understand that, but what else can I do for you? How can I do more than what you have asked for me? And then he says something that is very difficult. Love your enemies. Love your enemies. Now, this one stands out a little bit, because an enemy is someone who has chronic ill will towards us, someone who is always against us. If that includes someone hurting and take advantage of our family, the Bible gives no instruction about letting someone take advantage and hurt those that we are entrusted to protect, because love also does what? Love protects. Love does that. But we love them. If someone holds ill will against us, we're just going to love them. Well, what if they just talk bad about us? We're just going to pray for them. What if they revile us? What if they spread rumors about us? Well, we're not going to spread rumors back. And in fact, we're not going to go out and just try to defend ourselves, because what happens when we go out and defend ourselves? Make us look even more guilty. That's just the way the world works, you know. News report comes out. This politician did this, said this, okay? And then these are completely unfounded. What do we think when they say that? Who knows? Who knows? They're probably guilty. That's just what we naturally think. So what these things have in common are a couple of things. First of all, love. It has love in common. Also, these are disarming and de-escalating actions. Okay, think about that time that that person smacked you and you said, "You just assaulted me." What would have happened if you would have fought back? Well, then they would have fought back. Then you would have fought back, and then it's even worse than what it is. Jesus said, "Just don't do that. Just love them. Just love them." You know. My other grandmother used to say, we'll just love them anyway. You know, that was her version of bless your heart. We'll just love them anyway. You know, that's what we do. We just love them anyway. There are times when my parents loved me anyway. There are times when my pastor and his wife were nice to me anyway, okay? So that's just how we have to be to other people. We have to use love and kindness and all these things that love is to disarm and de-escalate situations. And so what does an opportunity for love look like in our home? I think that can be a bigger challenge than having a situation, because in our home, we're always with each other. And if someone mistreats me in my home, I'm still stuck with them, you know. Now, we understand when there are abusive situations, there are steps that need to be taken. And I'm not going to talk about that today, but we do understand that. So I'm not overlaying this on that. But for a godly home, consistent love must reign in our home. It has to be there every day. I appreciate my parents, and don't worry, they're not going to hear this, but they get it too. There was fussing growing up in my household. I hated it. I hated it then, and I hate it now. Now, I'm thankful for my parents. They both worked with the tools they were given. They always had the best intentions for us. You know, there was no abuse and things like that, but you know, they both grew up in fussy households. So to them, they just thought that's how it was. I even, Dr. Patterson told me about a couple that he counseled once that they were fussing all the time. And he counseled them, told them how to get along better. Well, they did that, but they came back later and said, you know what? We like fussing. Can you help us learn how to fuss with each other? Some people just want to fuss. You know, some people just want to do that. I am not one of those people. That doesn't mean I haven't ever raised my voice or anything like that or gotten fussy. But I have never understood the notion that, well, in the home, it's just going to be fighting. It's just going to be fussy all the time. I've never understood that. I've never agreed with that. I've never agreed with the notion that we can speak kindly to other people, but we don't have to speak kindly to each other. Now, I understand we should speak kindly to each other. We absolutely should. However, I'll note that by saying that being short with each other is not necessarily out of having a different standard. I have a standard for the world. I like them more, so I'll just be rude to my family. That's not always the case. The reason that we are more comfortable and we don't hold back as much with being short, huffing, showing our frustration, is because we feel safe with the people that we're with. If I'm you know, huffing around Nana, she's probably going to be nice, but there's going to come a time where she just say, well, I'm just going to go now. You know, I'm just going to go find something else to do. And she may even avoid me, and rightly so, okay? Well, my lovely missus, she can't do that. You know, she can, you know, say go upstairs or, you know, go play with your Star Wars stuff or whatever. But we're stuck with each other. And we feel a sense of security in that, not just in the situation, but emotionally. We feel secure enough that if I get angry, this person is not going to leave me and just completely give up on me because I have a bad day. So, but even still, it is good to speak kindly to one another. We don't have to repress our difficult feelings with each other. Sometimes it's helpful just to just huff a little bit, to just drop your arms, just to shake your head and say, child, you know, it's okay to be that way. And it's okay for her, dad, you know, that's not the end of the world if she does that. We understand having a good attitude and respect and so forth. But, you know, those things, they're not the end of the world, okay? And we can still allow our emotions to process without being disrespectful, without being, without being unkind to each other. We don't have to be repressed. We can show our anger and frustration to each other. And sometimes I think that's a good thing to do, because if we were to hide everything the way that we hide it to each other, then our partner, our children, our parents, they're not really going to know how we feel about something. Okay, so they need to know. So we need to be able to be angry in a safe way, in a safe environment. I understand all that, but even that will never excuse just being unkind, just fussing at each other all the time. When I'm using the word hate again, I may use it again. I hate, you know, having an environment. I was just not going to do that in my household. Don't get me wrong. Don't ask her if we've had our moments. You know, I think you know what you'd say. All parents have. The only people who haven't is this couple. They've never been mad at each other a single day in their lives, you know. And I'm kidding, and I know I kid about that a lot, but I do appreciate the godly example they have. But I can guarantee you, there are moments when they look at each other and say, you need or I need to go to another room right now, okay? I need to go for a ride right now. Somebody needs to step down right now. But, you know, even in failing with being kind to each other, there is forgiveness. And even if we speak in a way that we shouldn't, we've all had to apologize as parents. I've said this before. You will never be bigger to your kids than when you apologize. I have not always done it as I should. Sometimes I did. We're afraid we're going to lose face. We're afraid we're going to lose some credibility whenever we do that. But if we say to our kids, you know, I shouldn't have raged like that. I shouldn't have been too harsh. You know, even ask your spouse, what can I do to be a better spouse? Ask your kids sometimes, what can I do to be a better parent? You will be amazed at what it can do for your relationship. Now, if they said, you know, raise my allowance, well, I can't raise your allowance, you know. Sometimes they may say things like that. Give me more ice cream, okay. Well, you want good things, okay, that's good. I hear you. But sometimes they'll say things that make you think, oh, I've really dropped the ball on this. And we have to say, okay, I hear you. I want you to know that everything that I've done, even when I didn't do it right, I did it because I love you, and they understand that. But we can be kind. We can be empathetic. I'll talk about that a little more with one another. Empathy is a wonderful thing. It's different from sympathy. If Brother Jake is crying, I don't know what he's going through. I just cry because he's crying, or I'm sad because he's sad. That's what sympathy is. But empathy is when I know his situation and I say, buddy, I know what you're going through. I'm sorry that you're going through. And I try to feel the situation the way that he feels. That's empathy. And the description of love applies to empathy in more than one way. But when we are raging in our home, I talked about just fussing and fighting and arguing, just yelling. That's raging, okay? We can be angry with each other and still talk like this. I can be angry and use my words and speak rationally, use my prefrontal cortex, use good judgment, and be angry. But when I am just upset and my teeth are showing a little bit, and what happens then? This little part of our brain has shut down. And what is activated? Good old limbic system. What is that limbic system for? It's made for us to run away if a lion tries to attack us. That's what that's for, okay? And so freeze, fight, or flight, that's activated whenever we're angry and we're raging. Well, you do this and I do that. We have become children at that point because that's what children do. And they're supposed to do that. They're supposed to act like that. We're supposed to teach them boundaries and so forth. But that's what is happening whenever we're raging and we can't make sense and we can't argue. Now, under the surface, our needs are there, but it's whenever we're in that mode, stop. just stop it. Stop it. Stop it, okay? Stop. I've had to tell my kids before, we are going to talk about this later. No, we need to talk about this now. No, we are not, because your father cannot get his prefrontal cortex in order right now, okay? Can we put it that way? You know, we are going to talk about this later. Or we have to say, this is not a safe time. Everybody, emotions are high. It's not a good time. Or sometimes, if we're just on the verge of it, we know the signs. We see the signs coming. With some people, it's when they're getting like this. With some people, it's when they're getting real calm. Oh, when daddy gets real still. When mommy just stops talking. Ooh, we need to leave the room right now, okay? You know, it's different with everybody, and there's a lot to be said about that. But when that's happening, it's okay to stop. In fact, it's good to stop because we, emotionally speaking, become children at that moment. We really do, and I don't mean that insulting, okay? We need to have that system in our brain. We need to have that in operation on occasion. We need to know when I need to get away from this, I need to fight this, I need to play dead, I need to do what I need. God put that in our brain. But it is not for use towards our family. That's flesh. That's not the proper way to do that. So instead, we want to be empathetic to each other. We want to ask questions. Let me give you an example. If a child comes to you, or if you give a child a banana, Anyone ever given a child a banana and right before you gave it to them, or maybe not necessarily a banana, but you'll know what I'm talking about, you break it in half to give it to them. And as soon as you break it in half, they look at that broken banana and what do? They lose it. They just thought, you broke my banana. You broke it. How could you? And we're thinking, really? 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 Okay, you can still eat it. What do we say? You can still eat it. It's no big deal. It's not. And what are we doing? We're telling them they're wrong. We're not empathizing at all. We're just telling them they're wrong. Look, it's okay. It tastes the same. But banana. No, they wanted a whole banana. They wanted to hold it in their hand. They didn't want apple slices. They wanted to bite into an apple. They wanted to, you know, some form of that. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Our kids, our spouses, ourselves, you know, some form of that. That's what we do. So what do we do? So often we don't empathize at all. They are in an emotional position. They are maybe even feeling aggressive. What Jesus said, these situations that he described are in some way applying to this situation right here. So often we remove love, we remove kindness, or we don't use it to begin with. And it is hard. It is hard to do that every time. It is hard to stop ourselves and just empathize. But if you did this instead in a situation like that, you went to them and you said, look, you just described what just happened. You wanted a banana and you wanted it whole. You didn't want it broken. And so when I broke it, that made you upset. And now you don't think you'll enjoy the banana as much because you're upset. And doing that, you just watch that child change. I'm not telling you this 100% of the time, but you just watch that child's behavior change. I asked my daughter if I could use this example. Again, don't always get it right. I don't even want to quantify it, how often I get it right versus how often I don't. That's from our own self-examination. Y'all don't worry about that. Just worry about your own self. But we were coming in, and who appreciates the good old Joro spiders? The big old banana, you know, kind of thing, okay? We leave them around. You know, when we decorate outside, we'll get rid of them. But we leave them around. They get rid of bugs. They're great. They are completely harmless. They are as harmless as a daddy long leg, okay? I picked one up and held it in my hand. And sometimes we want to kill a creature for the cardinal crime of creeping us out. But, you know, you don't have to like them. That's okay. I'm not casting judgment in here. They're still creepy to me. They look like a giant hand with too many fingers. That's why it's so creepy, okay? And so we were coming in, and there was someone on the porch, and I was going to clean them out. So I just used my hand to do it. Sometimes I've gotten a stick, but I just used my hand. Belle did not appreciate that, okay? She don't like spiders. Okay? That's fine. Don't like spiders. By the look on your faces, you're thinking, yeah, you're right. She freaked out about that, rightly so. But, you know, and so I was using my hand to get that. No, Daddy, are you nuts? What is wrong with you? They're going to crawl on your hand. There's other bugs. There's flies in that. There's this. And there's all these things that she's saying. Daddy, what are you doing? What did I do? I just kept doing it. It's okay, honey. It's okay. And I'm still doing it because I don't want spiders. I'm not worried about spiders. Now, I'm thinking logically. I'm logic brain. I'm smart. This is scientific fact about the Joro spider. Joro spider harms humans. I'm being logical with her. She's not in the mood for logic, okay? It's okay to not be in the mood for logic sometimes. It's okay not to be in the mood for rationality. You know, we say men are more logical, women are more emotional. We need both. We really, really do. And there's obviously overlap. Men are not just rational. We are emotional too. You understand what I'm saying. But the point is that in that situation, and don't get me wrong, some of you dudes would have been worse than she was, okay? She was upset about this. And I wanted to just, if I could just explain it to her, I'm going to use my brain. I'm going to reveal my intellect. I'm going to quote some Wikipedia, and everything will be better, right? No, that's not it. So I said, okay, I got to do the thing, all right? I said, okay, and I've still got spider gunk on my hand. I said, okay, when you saw me come in, you saw me using my hands to get the spiders, which seemed gross and weird in itself, and you were worried about a spider getting on me. You were worried about the flies and the other junk that can be in that, and that made you very uncomfortable, right? And this is what happened. Church, a miracle. Miracle. Miracle happened. What? This is what she did. Yes. Her shoulders dropped. Because she was in a defensive position. Why would I want to be more offensive when someone is in a defensive position? Her shoulders dropped. And she said, yes. And she was immediately calm. And I said, okay, well, when I'm with you, I'll use a stick instead. Okay. And even if I did use my hand, she might be more understanding the next time that comes around. Because I showed what, in an emotionally charged situation, I can judge her all I want, which we do. And I can say, you shouldn't feel that. I can say that all I want. Doesn't matter. We can say, now, I'm not comparing the two, but the woman in adultery, we can judge her all we want. We can attack. It doesn't matter if someone is really wrong in the moment. We need to infuse every situation with love. When someone says, let me tell you about my day. Oh, well, let me tell you about my day. Well, when someone says, let me tell you about my day, what did they just do? They made a bid for communication. They wanted some comfort. They wanted some. There's lots of reasons that people may say that. What do I do? And even if we listen and then say, well, if you think that's something, let me tell you how my day was even worse. And we compare notes on that. That's not what they wanted. They just wanted an ear. Never underestimate the value of a quiet ear. Never. There's so much I could say about that. But the point is that's what they were looking for. And how dare I interrupt? How dare I say your trauma isn't as bad as mine? My stress is worse. Therefore, my story matters more. Therefore, that's really what we're telling each other. And on occasion I've even heard of some couples having. Let me tell you about my day, and they're really kind of joking about it. I'm not talking about something like that. I'm talking about a genuine bid for connection. How about this one? If you weren't just like your crazy alcoholic mother, we wouldn't be in this mess right now. Woo! And it's Katie, bar the door, close it. The house is about to be burned to the ground. It's over at that point, all right? It's completely over. Whereas, if we wait and nobody's raging anymore. Now, the person who said that just spoke a lot of truth. Yes. I am a little bit like my mom's not a crazy alcoholic, I'm just saying, but yes, you're right. I am a lot like my crazy alcoholic mother, but what did I do? I took a situation that needed love. This person needs love. This person needs help in that. And I just made it completely accusatory. Instead, if I were to say, and this isn't just some psychological trick I'm talking about here. If we were to say, instead, I know in a calmer time, I know that growing up in an environment like yours was difficult, and those things can stay with you. It makes communication difficult for both of us sometimes. I understand that. But tell me what I can do to not make it worse in the moment and to help you heal from that. The exact same information was exchanged. We're talking about the data. Problems with mom growing up. Problem now. Exact same information. But when we just put a little love on top of it, how much more trauma, how much more misery, how much more escalation could we save ourselves if we just put some love? How many times do we want to say, I bend over backwards for this family? Let me come at it from a different direction. We need love. And I bend over backwards for this family and nobody appreciates it. Well, I'm asking for love. I'm asking for it. I need it. But while I'm asking for it, I'm insulting the whole house. I'm insulting everyone. I'm telling y'all, all of y'all are doing it wrong. You should be loving me. But instead, I can say, again, same information. Instead, I can say, sometimes I feel like my need for recognition, and a need for recognition is not necessarily a bad thing. If you say, I deserve it, that's something else. But God created us in ways that we sometimes need. Not everybody's the same, but we need recognition for that. And instead we say, I don't feel like this, I feel like this need goes unmet sometimes. And with all the qualities, with all the good things that our household does, I don't want us to miss this also. This is something that I need. I know you're capable of doing that, but can you help me out with that? So not only can we give love in a loving way, but we can request love in a loving way. When a child is down, you can come to the music. When a child is down on themselves, what do we, I'm not smart, I'm not pretty. What do we say? We say, your position is wrong. That's what we often do. That we say, no, you are incorrect. They have come to us with a position. Now, maybe it's not based on fact, but we deal with things all the time that are not based on necessarily facts. There may be some facts involved, but they are not factually unintelligent. They are not factually unattractive. You know, even ugly people got good things about them. Okay, so you know, I got good things about me, Pastor. I really do. But honestly, instead of rejecting their position, because that's what we want to do. Oh, don't say that about yourself. That's not true. What do we do? Let's infuse it with empathy and love. And let's say, that sounds difficult. That sounds difficult to feel that way. I'm going to come to you. I want to meet you exactly where you are. That must be tough to feel so not good looking, or to feel like you're not smart enough. Why don't you tell me some of the things you like about yourself? Why don't you tell me some of the things that are good about you, that you're good at? What are some things you like? Well, I like my hair. Your hair. Your hair is lovely. That's right. Yeah, I like my hair. Okay. Well, tell me about something else. And instead of us challenging their position, let's help them to build themselves up. Because if they come up with it themselves, if it's their idea, this is a trick that parents, everybody, counselors, psychologists certainly try to use it. Pastors use it. You know, I say trick, but you know what I mean. It's you tell me what's good about you. You build yourself up, because if we can get them to do that, look what you just did. Look what you just did. Look what you just accomplished in yourself. We will never go wrong with gentleness. Never. We will never go wrong with gentleness. And we put these things to action by prayer, God's word every day with our family. Pray with your family every day. Mindfulness. And if you feel like you're having trouble getting somewhere on this, help is available. Talk to your pastor. If you tell him or pastor's wife, that's the appropriate way to go. I just go off sometimes. I need some help with this. I don't know what it is. Well, the help is available. Is it something that relates to your childhood? We can do that. If you got some trauma that needs to be healed, we can deal with that. You can do that. We can get there. And if you're not getting there, God, lead me to the answer, and He will do that. Let's stand together. I pray that this has come across in the spirit I intend it, and I like to use a little humor with that. But I believe I am standing in a room where 100% of its occupants genuinely want a loving, godly household.
Thank you for listening to the Restoration Apostolic Church podcast. We pray that you have been encouraged and changed by what you heard today. To keep up with RAC, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram. You can also visit our website at restorationapostolic.org. Be blessed in Jesus' name.